And we are back once again, episode installment number 295 of the Parish of the Patriots. I'm glad you joined us today. Hopefully we'll have a fun, great discussion. It's always my intention, have hopefully informative, interesting discussion, fun, entertaining. We like to have a good time. We're all about having a good time here at the Parish of the Patriots. If you are new, I know most of you are just returned members of the congregation, and I'm very humbled by that you decide to come back and listen week in and week out. It means a lot to me. If you are new, we do have a Christian specific segment, a sermon, if you would. That's roughly, very roughly, sometimes a halfway point of the show. It is geared towards people who are already Christian believers, but regardless of who you are or not, I encourage you to stick around and listen to it. Hopefully it's something different. Maybe not what you anticipate, but there it is. If you do get something out of the show, whether first part, last part, hopefully all of it, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. Take a look there on the description page with the ultimate privacy coin, a.k.a. snail mail. The address is right here on the description page at Radio Albion. So drop something in the snail mail. Drop your notes. I really do. Every little bit matters. Appreciate it. With that having been said, let's get into Lay Listener Supporter Mailbag. GPD, your shows are getting better and better every episode. I cannot wait for episode number 300, Mr. T. It is a milestone. 300. That's not including daily nationalist shows I've done and with Sven, different shows with Sven and whatnot. I cannot believe how many of these things, how many shows over the years that we've gone through. Hopefully good. I hope they do continue, you know, to get better and better, as you say, because it is hard. People who have never done it don't realize day, you know, week in and week out, and not being stale. It's very hard. It's enough for the faint of heart. But yes, indeed, 300. It's going to be a milestone, and I have every intention to blowing through it. GPD, finally got a chance at work to catch up on past shows. And heard my support only on that only one for that show. And looking at the date, I'm remiss at how long it has been. That's from Jackie. Of course, there's a lot here in between I'm not sharing because it's pretty personal information. But of course, I do read. These things. I appreciate it, Jackie. And yeah, it is an amazing thing. This is getting into the stuff that's in between that I didn't read. You know, this program. I remember when Obama was in there and they announced this, that they were going to intentionally set up government low-income housing to bring diversity to areas that were lacking it. You see, if you lived in an area that lacked government-forced diversity, you needed more integration. You're just not appreciating all of the benefits that diversity brings. So we're going to force you to get it whether you want it or not. Isn't that just such a... I don't know. Isn't that just such a thing, you know? I don't even know what to call it. Y'all just don't appreciate this diversity. So we're going to cram it down your throats, whether you like it or not. We're going to set up. They do. They've gone around. They've made it a continued government program. This is why I say, with this ridiculous election stuff going on, we'll get to that here in just a second. But the ridiculous election stuff going on, nothing changed. It started under Obama, through the Trump years, through the Biden administration years. All of it, it just continues soldiering on. They set up this government housing, which we know what that means. You're getting diversity. You know, whether that's in the form of you're getting inner city blacks moved into your neighborhood, or whether these foreigners, Haitians, they've got Haitians in small towns in Ohio now. Various illegals from all over the world, bringing them in, setting them up. You're getting the diversity, whether you like it or not. And this during the election season. When we hear about how important your vote is, this is the most importantest election ever. And they always seem mystified. They do this and people flee the area and go somewhere else. It's like they're playing whack-a-mole. Oh my gosh, look, you live in an area that lacks diversity. Let's cram this down your throat. We're gonna take over this, bulldoze this property, and we're going to set up some Section 8 housing so you too can enjoy diversity. And then it's just a mystery when everybody packs up and runs away and moves somewhere else. So we're going to have to follow you there and continue. Instead of just letting people live where the hell they want to. You know? There's a reason. But it doesn't matter. You see, it doesn't matter who you vote for. We got 1 week left, folks. 1 week of hearing about this. Ridiculous. I'm so tired of it. They're spam calling me again. I got a spam call yesterday from the Ted Cruz campaign. Robocall from the Ted Cruz campaign. Reminding me how important it is that I get out there and do this vote. I vote that you assholes quit calling me. Please, all of you, to stop. Of course, it is 1 week away. And this nonsense. Well, the voting day happens in a week. It doesn't mean it's over. It used to. Most of my life, when the election day happened, the next day you got up at voting on Tuesday, and most of the voting back then, you walked in and filled out a paper ballot, and somehow when you got up the next day, you know who won. Now they have all these voting machines, they have this, they have that, and it takes weeks to figure it out. Another way in which things just keep getting better somehow. Recently, I had a vote in the country, not the state, in the country of Georgia. And it didn't go the way the Global Homo wanted. And so now they're decrying that election's not real. You see, it works worldwide the way it works here. If they get the result they want, then our democracy is sacred. And in fact, you should go to jail if you even question it. If it does not go the way they want, then it's a fake democracy. It was rigged. The election was fake. And it's got to be overturned. Because, of course, the democracy only works one way, and that's for liberalism. And we know it's going to be the same thing. You know, as I say, we got a week and the election day's over, but it won't be over. Then they're going to have to drag out the vote counting. And it doesn't matter which one gets picked. And by picked, I don't mean by the quote-unquote voters. They play a nominal role in the process. The outcome is going, there's going to be negativity from the, regardless of which one of them is officially finally declared to be the winner. Nobody's going to accept it. Again, it used to not be this way. You had highly contested elections in the past, but they didn't frame it as the end of the world. You know, I mean, I look back over the decades at different election years, and they get contentious, you know, There'd be name calling, but not what we have now. This ridiculousness now is just it's silly. And what's going to be the outcome? You know, I mean, they hype this up, and at the end of the day, you're going to have basically half the country that's going to be up in arms over it. It's just another sign of how this system is unsustainable. You know, they keep getting more over the top with this, with the rhetoric, to try to keep everybody engaged and to buying into the system. And it's just, like I say, it's another sign of how it's not sustainable. If Trump is selected, then they're going to go around and say, they're already going around. They're setting it up, going around talking about he's the second coming of Adolf Hitler. And we're doing that again. They recycled Russian collusion, Russian meddling in the election. And now they're already moving on back to Trump is literally Hitler again. It's the same old thing. If they select Harris, the Trump people are going to say it was stolen again, which the whole thing is a rigged process. But alas, I don't care. I just want it to be over with, and then we can just see what happens after that. But it's not going to be good. Nobody's going to sit there and go, well, better luck next time. It's also unsustainable. But we're not going on about that on today's show. I don't care. I mean, I care in that, you know, it's relevant. It's relevant to the world around us. But I'm not going to sit here and act like this crap is real. That's definitely not. It amazes me they act like so much is going to change. Harris, I was sitting, I said I wouldn't go on about this, but there's a few more things. And then we'll move on, I promise. You know, I was sitting eating the other day. I was out of town. I was sitting in a place eating some lunch. And they had TV on and Kamala Harris up there making a speech. And it's like, they, thank goodness they had it muted, but they had the captions on, you know, and so you could read this nonsense. And I'm watching these, what she's saying, and it's like she acts like Trump is still the president herself. You know, all the problems you see in the world around you, it's all because of him. But he hasn't been in there for 4 years. It's all somebody else's fault. It is, like I say, and then you got the Trump people who correctly assess that the election last time was rigged, but this time somehow it's not going to be rigged and they're going to win anyway. Nobody has yet been able to explain how that works beyond, oh, we're just going to so overwhelmingly vote so hard that they can't even cheat. But I don't see where there's any limits to where they can cheat. Or you look at some of the big hoaxes and lies they've pulled off. As long as they can get the media to say it, eventually the people, apparently, the people will accept it. Again, that's all I'm going to talk about. I hate this election crap. I don't buy into this system. I reject it. Yes, I do not like the democracy, quote unquote, democracy values of who we are. Now, granted, they never do define that for us, but from what I've seen of it, it doesn't look all that great. All that great to me. Instead, let's talk about the fundamentals of life. These are the sorts of things I care about. The fundamentals. What it means. Be a man walking through this earth. Man walking on the face of the earth. What does it mean as we go through this life? These different stages, these different transitions. Maybe it's a part of the fact that I'm getting older, so I reflect more. I don't know. But I'm always amazed to observe the way people behave. The fundamental process of growing up, you know, going from being a child to a grown adult, it is a process. But I think one of the fundamental elements that makes you officially an adult, you know, is not getting your driver's license or you're old enough to buy cigarettes or alcohol or all of these different fake milestones they set up for you. You know, they set up these arbitrary ages as though people mature at the same rate. You know, the government says at 18, this arbitrary number, you're an adult. And yet you see men who are 30 years old and they're still childlike in their mentality. On the flip side, you sometimes will run into somebody who maybe they are 16 and they're very mature for their years. They're very grown up acting for the years. But you see, the government sets this arbitrary age. And that arbitrary age, it varies. It depends. You see, at 18, they're told you're an adult. When you were 17 years and 364 days old, you were still a child. But the next day, you're 18, you're an adult. Which means the government can draft you and send you off to war. However, you are not an adult enough to buy alcohol. You see, you're not adult for that yet. Or to buy cigarettes. You're adult enough for the government to come and kidnap you and send you off to some place you ain't never been to shoot people and kill them that you've never met to commit government-sanctioned murder. You're grown up enough for that. You have enough maturity for that. But if you want to buy a beer, tough stuff. You're not adult enough for that. The entire system encourages people to be as childlike for as long as possible. And it works. You got people that are middle-aged and they're still, hell, I see people who are old, my age or older, and they're still childlike in their thinking. They're still little kids. They're going through this world like little kids. Now, to get back on point, one of the things I believe is a fundamental milestone of whether or not you're an adult is when you understand and accept that your parents, your mom and daddy, were just flawed human beings. They're just people. They're not, that's it. They're just people dealing with their own shit. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. This sounds very simple. And yet, it amazes me how many people are unable to accept that. ever. I mean, when you're a little kid, when you're a child, your parents dictate to you. Your life decisions are made for you. What time you're going to eat, what you're going to eat, when you're going to bed, when you're going to get up, where you are going to go. You don't get a say in the matter. We're packing up, we're going to town. You don't get to say, well, I don't think we should go to this grocery store. You don't get a say in anything. And as such, and this is how it should be, but as such, you do, as a child, you view your parents as almost godlike. I don't, you know, you remember when you were a little kid and like, you know, like in elementary school, you get in arguments about whose dad is, you know, my dad, he whip any of your dads, that type of thing, you know, silly little kid stuff. Because your parents make all of your decisions. Your life is literally in their hands. You could no say anything. You have no, what do I want to say? You have no authority over your own life. Those decisions are made for you. But as you grow up and mature, you move away from that. And I always say one of the fundamental things, you have reached adulthood when you can look at your parents, not with disappointment. I mean, yeah, your parents, I'm sure, did disappointing things. They made really crappy decisions. As you make that transition into adulthood, you know, it's easy to become disillusioned with your parents because you're making that transition. When you were a child, they were like godlike beings. And then you start realizing all their faults and looking at, you know, maybe mistakes they made in raising you. It's easy to get disillusioned. You might go the other direction. They can't do anything right. You'll see this in new, fresh college students. You know, they'll come home and boy, they've done one semester at college. They come home and now they're the smartest person in the room. Mom and daddy don't know nothing. They're just stupid. They're making that transition, you see. When you reach adulthood, you realize you just accept your parents for all their faults and their mistakes. And you realize they had no clue. And I believe it becomes easier for people when they have children of their own and they realize, you know, they start having children of their own and now they're the parent and they're responsible. They're making all of the decisions. And at some point you stop and you think, I've got no clue what I'm doing here. I mean, I can draw off my experience growing up, but I know that some of that was suboptimal. Now it's all on me. How am I going to do this? And you realize your parents were just faulty, just people doing the best they can and driven by the passions that are common to man. And they made mistakes. Suboptimal decision. Put you in situations you should have never been put in. And it's fine to look at those things and learn from them. So when it's your turn, you don't make those mistakes. But beyond that, just let it go. I find it amazing when I see people who are my age or even older, or, you know, somewhere, 40, whatever age, and they can't let it go. They're resentful. They still resent their parents over the mistakes they made. Now, don't get me wrong. If you're a grown adult and your parents are deadbeat leeches and they like trying to leech off of you and stuff and use you and manipulate you or something, I'm not saying you should just turn a blind eye to that. I'm just saying you should see things for the reality they are. Of course, they're not perfect. Nobody is. It's ID. You look around at people and be like, oh, they got a lot better life than me. But they don't. Everybody puts their public face out there. They don't go around sharing. You see somebody and say, like, how's so-and-so? It doesn't matter what you're talking about. You know, Bill and Brenda, they got the perfect marriage. They get along so well. They're so happy together. They got the perfect marriage. Why, he got a great job and bought her a new house, and she looked good. You know, she looked good, and she's always smiling and pleasant. I guarantee you, that ain't the reality, because that's not the way reality works. Accept your parents for all their faults. Now, on the flip side of this, you have people, you know, like I say, you make that transition And at some point, hopefully, you become the parent. And there are parents who, quite frankly, they don't want their kids growing up. You just see people be critical, be like, man, that dude 25, 30 years old. He's still laying around acting like a kid. Why don't he grow up? And a lot of times the reality is mom and daddy don't want him growing up. They like being the deity in the child's life. This is a young man, 25 years old, and they're telling him to get up, brush your teeth, get like he's six. And that person, for whatever reason, is apparently fine with it. No responsibility. They just go ahead and let mom and daddy call the shots. And there are people that don't want to let their kids grow up. Parents have to be able to accept that there comes a time when their children have to transition to adulthood. But some people don't want them to. They want to keep them little kids forever. They want that control. I think it's reflective of their feeling of helplessness in their own lives. That they want to have that ultimate. It's about control. They want to have that control over somebody else. Maybe deep down inside, they feel anxious over their lack of control over their own lives. So if they can control their kids' lives, that gives them a feeling of comfort. Ooh, amateur psychology, granted. But it is. It's crazy. You see parents, they didn't want their kids to grow up. They might bitch about it. They'd be like, I wish my boy would get out there and start doing something. But they don't really. You got to make your own. You don't call your parents, did you? Got to make your own call. You got to let your kids grow up. They're going to, and that means they start making their own decisions. It's hard. It is. It's hard because you want to protect them. As your children become adults, they're going to partake in things where there's a certain amount of risk. They're going to do things that cause you to worry. And you worry for your kids. It don't matter if they're 50 years old. You're still going to worry for them like when they were little kids. But see, when they were little kids, you have the control. You go and tell them, no, you can't do that. That's dangerous. When they're 50, you just got to sit there and say, keep your worries to yourself. You can advise them and say, I don't think you should do that, son. That looks like a bad idea. But at the end of the day, you have to accept that they're grown men now. They're going to make their own decision and they're going to take their own risk. I always view it as this is payback for all the times I gave my parents worry. That's why, you know, you now you know where they were coming from. I don't know. You got to make your own decisions. But you always had to keep these things in mind. You have to understand as you get older that this world is different now. It is. It's harder for young people coming up financially to get a start. One of the things I find, you know, people have this, I don't know, they have this pattern doing things. And you can look at it positively or negative. One of the things that I think is generally speaking, a white people thing. And that is you will have this segment of people that will raise their kids. And when they hit that arbitrary age of 18, get your ass out of the house or start paying rent. Get out. I made it on my own. You can too. See, it's tough love. I'm kicking them out on the street. Yeah, well, when you were 18, you could rent a place for whatever, you know, $150 a month or whatever the hell. You know, have you looked around? Go get you a place of your own. I did when I was your age. Have you gone out and looked to see what it costs to, quote unquote, get a place of your own? Have you looked at your 18-year-old salary, if he's working, and asked yourself, okay, if I'm making this, how am I going to afford a place of my own? I don't know. There are a certain segment of white people that have this attitude of, you know, they're 18, kick them out of the house. That other people don't do that. I can't stand that. Now, I'm not talking about just letting your kids be deadbeats and trying to keep them to be children. But this idea that you've hit the arbitrary age, now get out of here, get out of my hair. You can come visit me twice a year. I'm going on a cruise or whatever the hell. I don't know, man. Jesus said, how many of you, if your child asks for a loaf of bread, well, instead, hand them a rock. But in a lot of ways, I see people that actually do that, basically, metaphorically speaking. get out and get on your own. But they don't even bother asking and looking and seeing, well, how much does it cost to do that now? And is that realistic? They want to sit there and gripe and say these young people don't want to do anything. They don't want to get out there. They got no ambition, and they don't really look into, okay, well, what's that going to look like? How are they going to do that? What kind of opportunities do they have? It is not the same as when you were 18, 20 years old. If they're putting forth that effort, this is my opinion. Y'all free to do what you want. It's my opinion that because things are different, it's much more difficult for young people to get a start. It just is. You can sit there and we can talk all day about why that is and whatnot, but it does not change the fact that it is. It's much more difficult for young people to get a start. That means it's incumbent upon the elder generations, whether you're the parents or the grandparents, to do everything you can to help them. Maybe you're not going to go on 3 freaking cruises this year. Maybe you ought to help your kids or grandkids get started in life with some of that money. If you have it, and look, a lot of us don't, but we still do what we can. You understand, they can't afford $2,000 a month rent on what they're able to make in this market now. They can't. So what can I do? You know, what can I do? If your kids are making the effort, you know, sit around and bitch and say they don't want to do nothing. But if they work and apply themselves and do the best they can, and at the end of the day, they're still broke, they can't afford a place of their own, there's no hope of getting started in life, is it any wonder they get discouraged and throw their hands up and say, I'll just play video games? If you don't want them to do that, then you're going to have to help.
Well, I didn't get any help.
It was different then. Shut the hell up. I know I've talked about this before, but this is things you can change. I can sit here and do 30 minutes about this bullshit election, and it doesn't matter. It's not going to change a damn thing. I can sit here and talk about how corrupt the government is for 30 minutes, and we do that sometimes just because the truth matters. But at the end of the day, you can't change it. I know I've talked about this before. And the reason is because this is something you can change. You don't have control over what other people do. You don't have control over decisions other people make. You have control over yourself and the decisions you can make. And if you want your children to do better, your grown children to do better, then maybe you can make a decision to help them do better. Again, I'm not talking about enabling destructive behavior. If your kid's on drugs, don't give them money to go buy drugs. That's an extreme thing. But accept that it's different now. And maybe you need to forgo some of your pleasure seeking to help them out. It's irrelevant if anyone. And most of the time, my experience is most of the time when older people spout off that bullshit,
nobody helped me, boy. I'll tell you what, I struck out on my own.
The reality, if you could talk to their parents, it'd be like, yeah, no, he didn't.
Oh, yeah, he went hitchhiking across the country. How do you think he had money for food? He'd call me up and I'd have to wire his hippie ass some money. That's what I had to do. He'd be calling me up from Chicago like, oh, I'm hitchhiking across the world, Daddy, and I need food and I need money. Mom and Daddy wire him some money. But when he's telling it now to his now grown kids, oh, I struck out. I tell you, I struck out and made it on my own. Bullshit. Ain't nobody makes it on their own. That's a fact. I'm going to tell you something else, too. Anybody spouse says, I made everything. I did everything on my own. I made everything on my own. Nobody does everything on their own. That's just not the way the world works. You got to have people around. You got to have people to help you. You got to have people that you work with, that you can work together with to accomplish something. I did it all on my own.
I talk about this because this is something you can do. This is something, regardless of who you are. You know, if you're the parent or the child, in this case, the young adult, as we're talking, these are decisions you can make.
If you're an adult and you're looking at your parents, understand they're just faulty, screwed up people just like you. Get over the childlike view that they're supposed to know all the answers, because they don't. And if you're the parent, let them grow up. At some point, you have to accept that they are going to make their decisions for themselves. You're not going to make them for them. Also, if they're putting forth effort, you're going to have to help them. Yeah, maybe you want to just go off and do whatever you want, and they should be able to figure it out. Look, it's hard now. If you want them to amount to something, you're going to have to also put in, well, I shouldn't have to do that. Tough, that's how life is. You know, when people live in a nation that gets thrown into war, they don't want to have to flee. They don't want to be refugees. They're just, you deal with the reality. It's hard now. You're going to have to help your now adult kids to get a start. You're going to try to pool some resources and figure out some way to help them out if you can afford it. You might have to help them with their rent. It is what it is. As a world. If not, you're going to have to let them, if you can't afford that, and I understand, you have to let them live at home and sit there and don't sit there and be like, oh, well, I'm going to make you pay rent. Who the hell? I'm sorry. Who the hell charges their own flesh and blood rent? I'm sorry. That is something that just, that's foreign to me. How the hell are you going to charge your own flesh and blood rent? Helping you, I'm going to help you out, but you're going to give me some money for it. I talk about this because, again, this is something you can change. You can't change the government you live under. You can't change the world around you. Your broad proclamation. I mean, you don't control other people. But this is something you can change. This is something you do have control over. These are decisions you can make. And my gosh, if you can't better the lives of your own children, how do you imagine that you're somehow going to change the whole world fundamentally or for the better? If you're walking around still resenting your mom and daddy and you're a grown-ass man, knock it off. Grow the hell up. Yeah, of course they screwed up. If you ain't grown up if you ain't figured out why. Of course they were dealing with the same BS you're dealing with in the sense that the same failings as anybody has. Give them a break and move on. Time to grow up. Make your own decisions. Anyway, we got to keep going. I'm looking at time. We're going to get into the Christian specific segment. Hopefully you will get something. Hopefully you'll stick around for that too. So you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon, The Parish of the Patriots. Now, of course, it is the wonderful election season here in the U.S. So of course, we're hearing lots about my democracy. Let's look at the 12th Psalm. And it's a short psalm, so it's one of those rare occasions. I'm just going to go ahead and read the whole thing, because like I say, it's really short. So I want to go through this. As I read through the 12th Psalm, I want you to think about how this system here in the West, in the U.S., how it works. And with that in mind, keep that in your mind as the context as we go through the 12th Psalm. Help, Lord, for the godly man ceaseth, for the faithful fail from among the children of men. They speak vanity, every one with his neighbor, with flattering lips, and with a double heart do they speak. The Lord shall cut off all flattering lips, and the tongue that speaketh proud things. Who have said, with our tongue will we prevail? Our lips are our own. Who is Lord over us? For the oppression of the poor, for the sighing of the needy, now will I arise, saith the Lord. I will set him in safety from him that puffeth at him. The words of the Lord are pure words, as silver tried in a furnace of earth, purified seven times. Thou shalt keep them, O Lord, thou shalt preserve them from this generation forever. the wicked walk on every when the wicked walk on every side when the vilest men are exalted. Now, this psalm reads like election, a description of campaign season in the democracy in the U.S. You've got these men that just speak all the. If you turn on the TV or anywhere you go, you've got these people speaking vanity, which is pointless things. They speak pointless things, just flattery. Oh, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. We care. It's all vanity. Ted Cruz is, because I'm here in Texas, and you know Ted Cruz's ads are all about, you know, his Democrat opponent Allred. He wants all these transgenders. He wants all these boys in the girls' locker rooms. Colin Allred's ads here recently are all about. He wants to oppress the women by not letting them slaughter their unborn children. And this is what passes for politics. With our tongue we will prevail, our lips are our own. Who is Lord over us? You see, they believe they're so slick with their slick talking, their lies, and their flattery. Who is Lord over us? We're the masters of our domain with our forked tongues. Now, one of the lines that really struck out at me here and why I picked this is the very last one, verse 8. The wicked walk on every side when the vilest men are exalted. The wicked walk on every side when the vilest men are exalted. Isn't that a punctuation mark? The vilest men are exalted. Aside from perhaps the media, can you picture anybody being more vile than those who are exalted in the democracy system? The most competent people aren't elected. It's the best liars. It's the best slick talkers, best salesmen, the ones who can elicit the best emotional response out of people. Whether it's Ted Cruz whipping up conservatives because his opponent wants more transgenders in girls' locker rooms, or whether it's Colin Allred talking about how Ted Cruz is going to kill all the women if they are not allowed to slaughter their unborn children. See, all of it is based on whipping up some sort of emotional appeal. I really like that line. Wicked men walk on every side, and the vilest of men are exalted. You see all of that around us today. Wicked men walk on every side, everywhere. You just look all over. There's just wickedness everywhere. And it says here, when the most vile of men are exalted, our entire system is designed around exalting the most vilest of men. Now you may say, well, okay, I get it that this is coming from the Psalms. It's the Christian-specific message here. But it's the Christian-specific message because of the pursuit of truth. And when you read a truth like this, it come from so long ago, and you can see, you can just overlay this truth and see that it hasn't changed. The wicked are everywhere. The most vilest men are exalted. One of the things I find off-putting is, you know, most Christians are a lot of the, a lot of your run-of-the-mill conservatives, conservative normies, if you would, in this country, will probably identify, if you ask them, that they're Christian. You say, do you have a religion? Yes. What is it? Oh, I'm Christian. I'm a Christian conservative. And you know, don't get me wrong, a lot of these people, if you know them, they're very good people. They're nice people. You know, they're okay. But they're very misled. One of the things I find very off-putting is these people deify the founding fathers of the United States. A lot of times, you know, we grow spiritually as believers, and that requires seeking truth. And the truths also apply to the world around us. Just as what we read in the book of Psalms, you look at that, it tells you about the truth in the world around us. Christian conservatives
they tend to deify the founding fathers. I grew up with this, and part of my journey of truth, both spiritually and understanding how the world works around me, and again, the two are very interrelated. As a part of that journey, I realized that that the founding fathers of the United States did not set up some great system of government. They'll say, oh, the founding fathers, they said, I grew up, as all of you probably did too, listening to, you know, the founding fathers, they just had this infinite wisdom. They set up this amazing, the best form of government ever devised among men. Yeah, it's got its faults. But this is the best form of government ever imagined, ever established in the world. But is that what God established? When you read through the Bible, when the men demanded a form of government, when the men of Israel demanded to have a form of government, an official form, a king, God gave them a king. He purposely gave them a very faulty king in Saul, but he gave them a king. So when God established a form of government and gave a form of government to the people, he gave them monarchy. So when people say, oh, the founding fathers came up with the best form of government ever imagined on the face of the earth, it is in a way a blasphemy, because it's saying that the founding fathers were more wise than God. See, when the men of Israel demanded a government, an official form of government, God gave them monarchy. He gave them a king. So how do you say the founding fathers came up with something better? That's not to say monarchy doesn't come with its faults. The Old Testament is full of the history of really awful kings. But there were good ones in there too. And if you had a decent king, if you had an upright king that followed the Lord and did his best and worked for the good of the kingdom, you got to enjoy that basically your entire life, or at least for as long as the king lived. And what do we have? As I know what the founding fathers originally established was much more limited than what you see now. But if you really are familiar with it, you look back, and as soon as they wanted to do away, I mean, just immediately, they wanted to do away with the Articles of Confederation, which were honestly a better setup if they weren't going to go with monarchy. As soon as they convinced them to go with a central authority in Washington, D.C., a central authority government, and the Constitution, you know, the fix was in, as it were. And then, of course, they assured everybody, well, it's okay. If at any point you don't like it, you can leave. And just a few short decades later, Abraham Lincoln reneged on that deal and let everybody know, no, you can't actually leave. I find it amazing when people will go around talk about this is the best system of government. With all of its faults, it's the best form of government ever. And yet the results tell us otherwise, as does the 12th Psalm. Wicked men walk everywhere when the most vile men are exalted. And this entire system is set up to where the most vilest of men are exalted. Okay. I want to change gears, but in a way not, because we're talking about, you know, with the people. We can see the democracy in action. We're continuing with the democracy in action, and how easy it is when you have a system to where, you know, the people blown here or there, everywhere. So let's switch gears. We're going to jump up here to the New Testament, Matthew chapter 21. I want to read verses 8 through 11. And this is Jesus entering into Jerusalem, and a very great multitude, and this huge crowd with him. And a very great multitude spread their garments in the way. Others cut down branches from the trees and strawed them in the way. And the multitudes that went before and that followed, crying, saying, Hosanna to the Son of David, blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord,
Hosanna in the highest. And when he was come into Jerusalem, all the city was moved, saying, Who is this? And the multitude said, This is Jesus, the prophet of Nazareth of Galilee. And this huge multitude following him in. Huge multitude of people laying their clothes down so the donkey he was riding wouldn't even be touching the dirt. Praising God. Praise be to God. Praise be to the one who comes in the name of the Lord. I have a question for you. A few short days later, they crucified him. Where were these people? He came in with this giant multitude celebrating him, coming before, after him. He's surrounded by a mob of people. It caused such a stir that they asked every the people in the city, he's like, what's going on? Who is this guy? It's Jesus, the prophet of Nazareth. Multitude of people cutting palm leaves, laying them before him. A few short days later, the mob of people is saying, crucify him. So I ask, where were these people at? When they came for Jesus to execute him, where were these people at? Where was this crowd of people? They didn't run out there to yank him off the donkey and take him before Pilate. Because he had a mob of people. So he had all these people supporting him. A few short days later, he's by himself. Even the 12 are scattered. And there's certainly not a mob of people. Well, there is. They're all yelling, crucify him. I've often wondered when you read of the people yelling, give us Barabbas. Crucify him. What do I do with Jesus? Crucify him. How many of those people were the same people that were going around throwing palm leaves on the ground? Going around hollering, praise be the Lord. How many of them were in the same crowd? They just switch over, start yelling, crucify him. This is how easy it is to move people. He comes into town with this huge crowd. Giant entourage, as it were. And it didn't matter. Just a few short days, they were able to manipulate the people, and they all switched over. Now they're turning around going, crucify him, crucify him. They're up there mocking him. If you're the Son of God, why don't you bring yourself down? You see, and they didn't even have mass media. They didn't even have the media to whip up the hysteria, to manipulate the crowd. As they do now. You see, people get frustrated and they say, why don't people wake up? Why don't people wake up? And you go back and you look here. And you see, this is how people have, in a lot of ways, this is how people have always been. The same people that are on one side one day, just a little bit of manipulation, just a little bit of emotional appeal. And within a matter of days, they're yelling, crucify him. Hey, it's the democracy. The people voted. The people voted. They wanted Barabbas. They wanted Jesus executed. Hey, we gotta respect the will of the people, right? It's our democracy. It's our democracy in action. And through all of it, Jesus remained unchanged. This is a lesson as well. Jesus held to the truth. He held to his integrity, to who he was. Through all of it. When there were big crowds thronging around him, he didn't let that go to his head. He didn't give that any more mind than when they all abandoned him. You see, the constant through all of it is Christ. He remains the same, whether he's got a big crowd around him, whether they abandon him. And at the very end, he's by himself. You see, all through it, he holds fast to the truth. This is an example for us as Christian believers. We strive to be as Christ-like as possible. And so we need to remain true to that as well. Whether, you know, regardless of what the circumstances surrounding us are, just as Jesus maintained his own integrity, regardless of the circumstances that surrounded him. Of course, all this manipulation and whatnot came from the exalted
religious leaders of the time, the Pharisees and the scribes, with their little thing they had going, their tradition of the elders. And once again, you reflect back, the most vilest men are exalted. And what happens to everybody around? You got wicked men on every side when the most vilest men are exalted. Who was exalted at that time? The Pharisees. It always amazes me when you read about, I've one of the most fascinating accounts. I mean, of course, obviously, I find all of it very interesting. One of the really fascinating aspects of the New Testament is, and we've done shows on this before, is the process of the crucifixion of Jesus. It is a process from start to finish. And at the conclusion of it, I've always viewed this as a back and forth between the Pharisees and the Lord. And a deal is being struck, so as to speak. In other words, they're taking it on. They, when Pilate washes his hands and says, I don't want the guilt of this, y'all are the ones that are, the people are demanding it. The democracy demands it. I don't want to, his blood isn't on my hands. And they proclaim, let his blood be on us and all our generations, all of us to follow. See, that is an agreement. They're making that deal. And we look around us today, and there are people in positions of power, and it's clear that they too have made their own metaphorical deal with the devil as well, in exchange for some power, for some position, for some prestige, for some sort of status of exaltment here in the world. Now, it's funny because you look at a lot of these people and they're obviously not very smart, whether you're talking about politicians in government or some of these celebrities or whatnot. But it's become apparent that when you look at people who are given nominal positions of power to go out and make broad proclamations, and if you pay any attention at all, it quickly becomes readily apparent that these people aren't very smart. And some are baffled by this, but it really stands to reason, because who the hell makes a deal with the devil? When you think about the trade-off, where you're going to be in the absence of time, selling yourself out to hell in exchange for just a little bit of time on the earth with some position, some status, some authority. And the thing about making deals with the devil is, he doesn't care about you. He hates humanity. See, when the Lord gives a position, when the Lord gives something for apostles or prophets or his people to do, he actually cares about them. Those who make a deal with the devil, he hates them all along. So he will use them as long as it serves his purpose. But he has no sense of loyalty. He doesn't deserve. Jesus warned he's a liar and a murderer from the beginning, and that applies to the people who decide to serve him as well. It applies to his very own children. He does not love like the Lord loves. He's incapable of that. He hates humanity. And so these people who sign on for a deal in exchange for a little bit of power and position during this just faint little glimmer of existence of this time we have in this world, as soon as it suits him, the devil will throw these very same people under the bus. Doesn't bother him a bit. As soon as their usefulness is run out, he'll toss them under the bus. He'll make a parody of them. He'll parade them about the street to be mocked. He doesn't care. And yet, he never has a shortage, does he? He never has a shortage of people who jump up and grab that deal. I can be rich. I can be famous. I can have a position of authority and power. I can get invited on news shows, on TV, and treated as a VIP, ride in the back of a limousine, have an armed security detail, and people be kissing my ass. He never falls short of people who are just clamoring to get in line to make that deal. It ain't like he's got to go out and recruit. He got people lined up, crawling all over one another. Let me. It really strikes a contrast, doesn't it? The people of God, for believers, we struggle through this world for a reward that we are not going to see until we leave this world. And it all comes down to that line. This life, the temporary life, the temporal life, and the eternal, where there is no time. When we leave this world, when we're birthed into the real life, when we're birthed into the eternal realm. I always say one of the things as believers, we struggle for something through this life that we know we're not ever going to attain in this life. What we struggle and what we strive for, we're not going to get it, not here. We will see the rewards. We'll see the fruits of our labor. It's like if you think of somebody growing a crop or a vineyard. We're not going to harvest the fruits of our labor in this lifetime. We will not. And yet we strive for it. This is faith. That striving for it. When we reach the kingdom of God, when we reach the eternal, when we're birthed into the eternal, and everybody is, then we'll have the opportunity to see the fruits of our labor. And we apply ourselves to this, regardless of what's going on in the world, regardless of the obstacles in front of us, the strife, the trouble, the problems. We still strive, knowing we're not going to attain what it is we seek to attain in this life. But once we're birthed into the eternal, once we're birthed into what I call the real life, then we will see it. And what we have, the fruits of our labor, you know, it's written, you know, where no moth can eat it, like your clothes. No, nothing can corrode it, like gold and silver or things you can have in this world. Once we have it, we have it. When we reach that place, nothing can touch it. You know, it's ours. In other words, that's how we spend the rest of our existence, where time isn't even a concept, so as to speak, outside of time. Now, these people, they make the other choice. For this little bit of something right now, they forego anything positive, anything in the real life when they're birthed into the eternal. It is the inverse of what we strive for. They strive for everything right now. It can be discouraging. Look around and see these people who are just monumental assholes. And they have all these positions of power. They're monumentally corrupt. They're the vilest of men who are exalted. Whether they're the super rich, whether they're those who run all these corporations, whether they're politicians, whether they're whatever. The most vilest men are exalted. That could be discouraging. But we always should heed and we should always remember that this is all they're ever going to have. It's written time and again, don't be jealous of them. You know, don't look at these people and be envious of them. This is all they're ever going to get. They've made that decision. This is it. Now, the older you get, I'm in late autumn, early winter, the last season, winter being the last season you're ever going to get in this life. But if you live long enough for that, you realize how incredibly short life is. You know, incredibly short, how quick it is. And yet, when you leave this world, time doesn't even exist. It's like the difference, I don't know, it's like the difference between a thimble full of water and the ocean. You know, a cup of water and the ocean. Like Esau selling his entire inheritance for a bowl of soup, for some stew. You see, this is nothing. This existence we have in this life is so short, compared to the eternal, that it's not even worth mentioning. It's just here today, gone tomorrow, where the eternal is forever. It is without time. It is your state of where you're going to be. So when you see these people, remember that. When the media tells you how important they are, or how exalted they are. We know we live in a world where the vilest of men are exalted. Remember, it's all they're ever going to get. And when the clock runs out, that will be taken from them. And that's it. There's no going back. There's no, do-overs. This is it. It's no wonder. On a certain fundamental level, they themselves know this. You know, that's why you see these people and they're ridiculously old and they're just clamoring so hard to stay alive. We all know they're doing infant blood transfusions. You all know they're getting whatever kind of organs transplanted in. They dream of having their consciousness put into a computer or something, and they're fighting desperately to keep what they've got in this world. Because on some fundamental level, they themselves know that they traded out for this little short time. And now when the time's running out, you know, all of a sudden, maybe this doesn't look like such a good deal after all. For the believer, our faith is demonstrated every day. We get up and we live our lives the best we can for the Lord. We strive to understand Him, to grow spiritually. The wicked men around us that abound around us, let them go their own way. As Jesus said, let the dead bury their dead. Pay them no heed. They have sold out for a little bit. Have sold any inheritance they might have had for a bowl of stew. Your faith is every day you get up and make the different decision. You decide to take the difficult path. You decide to try to enter through the narrow gate. And Jesus said to take heed because it's difficult. It's difficult. Many will attempt to enter it. Few will be able to. Few will be able to. Many are going to try to get in. It's hard. It's, of course, it's hard. Of course, it's the difficult path. Everybody else is going this other way. And yet, we choose to keep striving for it. This is your faith. You see, people sit around and go, well, I don't know how strong my faith is. Look, every day, your faith, you take the action every day that make the decision of how you're going to live your life. That is your faith. It has nothing to do with how you feel about it, your emotions, whether you're upset or whatever. None of that's relevant. Every day that you make that decision, you look around and vast, vast majority of these other people are not making that decision. Take it to heart. For Jesus said, narrow is the way. It's difficult. Of course, you're not going to look around. Everybody else is doing the same thing. Of course, you're taking a different path. That's not what the majority is doing. You see, that is your faith in action. Anyway, this week's Christian specific segment seems kind of all over the place, honestly. I sit here and be self-critical at times, and say, I don't know. It's kind of all over the place. I hope you got something out of it. I really do. It's always what I strive for. This roughly 30 minutes or so where we do this, this is the culmination. This is why I do what I do. And I always come away thinking maybe I could have done that better. So hopefully you got something out of it. I appreciate you sticking with me to the end here. I hope you enjoyed the entirety of the show. Again, thank you for joining us, and hopefully we'll see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.